That is the International Morse Code signal, the cry for help. And that marks the beginning of my program, Gilbert Talks Taxes, because as we all know, taxation with representation has not been such a good idea either. Good morning, everyone. We are here on this 14th day of October, and tomorrow is the deadline to file your tax returns, but it's a Sunday, so they're pushing it to Monday is the last day to file your tax returns if you filed an extension. If you don't file it by Monday, you are late. I'm going to talk about all that, talk about taxes. I'm going to talk about you house flippers out there, you construction people that are flipping houses, or if you're a real estate agent and you flip houses, or if you've just watched way too much HGTV and you think you're going to do just get rich flipping homes, let me tell you what the IRS has got to say about that. I'm going to get into that. The program is Gilbert Talks Taxes. I am Gilbert Carmona. I own Carmona Financial Consultants. We are at 704 Oak Street, Forest City. I have another office in Tryon, 226 South Trade Street, the beautiful Art Deco building right off the historic downtown Tryon. And I am an enrolled agent, along with Emily, who's also an enrolled agent. Our power comes from the Internal Revenue Service. We are actually permitted to practice before them. We represent you, the taxpayer, so you don't have to pay a penny more in taxes than you're supposed to. That's the theory of what we do. It's called tax avoidance, Tom. Tax avoidance. And it's legal. People don't understand. People say, can I do that? Yes, it's in the code. Everything I tell you is in the code. Tax avoidance. Different from tax evasion. And my job is to know all of these rules and all of these laws. So I'm going to talk about house flipping, home flipping. Those of you out there that are engaged in that activity or thinking about it, listen up. Go wake the neighbors. Get every house flipper you know on the phone. Now, most of those guys are already at work because it's already 8:04 in the morning. They've already been working for an hour. Those guys get up early. Yeah. So they're listening to us there while they're at work. So put the hammers down and listen to this because I'm going to get into some tax law. And the thing about it is that I've had conversations with CPAs who don't even understand this. And it happened that I was talking to a CPA and we kind of got into a discussion about this. And I said, I better talk about this. I'm also going to talk today about gift tax. When you make a gift, yes, that gift is taxable, but it's not to the person you gave the gift to. I'm going to talk about that, and I'm going to explain how that all works. And that, I mean, I could do a three-hour program on just that. There are so many rules and regs on that, but I'm going to distill it down like I do everything else for all of you. And, okay, so I've said who I am. I've said what I do. My engineer this morning, Tom. Good morning, Tom. The ever-cheerful Tom. Yes, that's you. The ever cheerful Tom. My telephone number, by the way, for those of you that need their tax returns done. Now, we've actually had people call this week. And for whatever reason, their accountant, CPA, tax preparer couldn't deliver, couldn't get it ready by Monday. So we've actually had people calling. We've been able to accommodate some. We've been all hands on deck all week, working late into the night. And but it's Monday. Monday's it. We are working today. We're going to be at the office today. Telephone number is 828-289-9300. We're going to be there today till about 5 o'clock. We're going to be there probably tomorrow afternoon for a couple hours, wrapping up some loose ends. And we will be there all day Monday. So I am an ERO. That is an electronic return originator. So what does that mean? Not only do I do your tax return, I also e-file it. I send it to the IRS, okay? Then when they get it, it gets time-stamped. That's it. That's official. If you do it before midnight on Monday, you are compliant, okay? So we will probably be a late Monday night for us, if I know. If past performance is indicative of future performance, yeah, we're going to have the people calling us at 4 o'clock on Monday going, what's that deadline date again? We're already getting those. We already got those Friday, yesterday. When's that deadline again? Oh, hold on. I'll get you my stuff right now. Now, people that if you don't have everything done, you don't have everything ready, you're missing something. There's a document you can't get your hands on. You've been waiting for it. you have two options. You can either file the tax return without it and then go back and amend, or you can be late. Okay. Now, really, there is really a third. I'm sorry. Be late was the third option. The second option is you can come up with a, try to come up with a reasonable number depending on what the document is. Okay. You can come up with a reasonable number. We can try to work around and get it on your tax return. But the point is, let's get that tax return filed, because the third option is to not file that tax return. Now you're going to have a failure to file penalty. And that's the big penalty. That's the one that really, if you owe, that's the one that, you know, increases what you owe by 25 to 50%. So that's the one we're trying to avoid. That's the big one. And I would rather get a tax return filed and then go back and amend and catch a loose end or something. And people say, well, I don't want to have a red flag. Amending is a red flag. No, amending is not a red flag. That is absolutely. As a matter of fact, we were talking about this at the office the other day. I have amended hundreds of tax returns. I don't even know how many. It could even be thousands. We've amended a lot of tax returns. Sometimes, folks, it's my fault. Something I missed. Something we didn't catch. We're always reviewing tax returns. We don't file it and forget it. We keep your data before us. When you come and we do next year's tax return, we look at last year's data and we compare notes and we look at things. And those of you out there can testify. I've called you and said, hey, this wasn't right. You know, do we fix it? Do we not fix it? How important is it? How relevant is it? Does it affect anything? We look through it. So it's not, I don't file it and forget it. You're a client. Okay. So, so we were talking about this week. I said, we have amended hundreds and hundreds of returns, maybe even 1,000. I don't know. And I have never, ever in 23 years had an audit because of a tax return I've amended where it's come back. As a matter of fact, I couldn't remember an audited tax return that was part, I'm sorry, an amended tax return that was part of an audit. Because we've been in audits and things happen. I cannot remember one. And there might have been one, I don't know, but I just cannot remember one. So that's a lie. That's not true. Amending is not a red flag. What is a red flag is you don't file a tax return. That's going to get flagged in the system. You will get letters. If they determine that you had a tax debt, you will get letters. Now, you don't have the money to pay it. I get it. A lot of people, that's okay. We can ask for a payment plan. We can work that one out. But the failure to file is the big penalty. You got to get that thing filed. Now, prior years, we have a lot of people, especially since COVID, we've had some people that just legitimate. People were sick. A lot of things have happened in the last couple of years, Tom, for those of us that have been keeping score. I mean, a lot's gone on. We've had hurricanes. We've had COVID. A lot of things. Just get those prior year tax returns done. Because what happens is, and I've got a client right now who came to me. They did not file 2019. They filed 2020 and they owed money. They filed 2020. The last one I did for them was 2019, and then they did their own thing. They came back to me to do 22. So they didn't file 20. They filed 21 late and owed money. I didn't do that. They went somewhere else. They did it themselves, I think. Anyway, they came back to me, and legitimately they were out of work. They were sick. They had a lot of things going on. So they came back to me with 22. Filed 22. They owed a little bit of money. They owed a little bit of money for 21. Went. Try to go ahead and get a installment agreement, payment plan in place. And the auditor said they never filed 2020. I cannot do an installment agreement till they filed 2020, which I knew that, but I didn't know they hadn't filed 2020. So I told them, I said, you guys know you haven't filed 2020? They're like, oh yeah, all that. All that. Oh yeah, oh, that's right. So one of those. So you got to get them filed. Let's just get them all filed. It's called being compliant. And what if it's a zero return? North Carolina, among other states, requires you to file it whether it's a zero or not. Now, it's a gray area. There is no penalty. There is no fine. There's no anything for not filing a zero return. But North Carolina said when they pull you up in their system and they see what they call gaps, a gap where there's no tax return been filed, then it raises a question. Well, why was a tax return not filed? And a lot of times people say, well, I went out of state to work. I came back. And it happens. They're like, okay, well, file a zero return. Let's get the gaps filled. So the idea is they want you to file a return. Okay, so I got that out of the way, Tom. Deadline. Say it again. Deadline. Monday. File your tax return before midnight. Good thing. Wait till after midnight. Bad thing. Can I break it down any simpler than that, Tom? No, that's it. Even Tom understood that. Okay. Whoa. I really explained it then. Now. Let me talk about... Everybody knows what happened. I mean, the whole world knows what happened last Saturday. While we were here doing this program, Israel sustained a major attack. And the IRS, which when this first came out, somebody said, who would that affect? Well, I've actually got clients in Israel. I actually have 4 clients in Israel, 2 businesses and 2 families in Israel. So yesterday, the IRS issued IR Proclamation 2023-188, and I'm reading it. Taxpayers impacted by the terrorist attacks in Israel qualify for tax relief. The October 16th filing deadline and other dates are postponed to October 7th. They're postponing it a full year, October 7th, 2024. So they are postponing all deadlines for people impacted, for taxpayers. These are American taxpayers or foreigners that have to file an American tax return. So I have actually, as I said, and from what we understand, everybody's okay. All of our people are okay. The ones we have to do with in Israel, which it's surprising, it's quite a few. You really think, well, it's way over there. It's really not. There are a lot of people that we know there. I've had some business clients there, and I've got some families there that I do their tax returns. Most of them are American, either dual citizen status or American citizens that have businesses in Israel. And they have to file an American tax return or some kind of paperwork in America to report income or bank accounts or, you know, whatever tax returns they have to file. So I'm going to read it again. Taxpayers impacted by the terrorist attacks in Israel qualify for tax relief. The October 16th filing deadline and other dates are postponed to October 7th, 2024. Washington, D.C., and let me just go ahead and read the first part of it. Washington, D.C., the Internal Revenue Service today announced tax relief for individuals and businesses affected by the terrorist attacks in the state of Israel. These taxpayers now have until October 7th, 2024, to file various federal returns, make tax payments, and perform other time-sensitive tax-related actions. So they issued, there was another notice. So this is IR. So there's a couple of different things that go on. They published a notice, which is a little bit more official than an IR. They published notice 2023-71, which posted yesterday, 13th of October, on IRS.gov. The IRS provided relief to certain taxpayers due to terrorist attacks. They may be unable to file a tax filing or tax payment obligation, may be unable to perform other time-sensitive tax-related actions. Pretty much the same thing, just worded a little different. Now, what's involved in this? Pretty much, I'm not going to read the whole list. It's pretty much anything involved forms or payments to the IRS. That's 941 payroll taxes, estate taxes, 706, 709, 1041, pretty much all of it. So it's any individual. Okay, so it's pretty much all of it. 1040s, businesses. Again, the whole, it's a pretty long list, but it's pretty much everything. Who qualifies for the relief? Any individual whose principal residence or business entity or sole proprietor whose principal place of business is in Israel, the West Bank, or Gaza. Now, Gaza, when they talk about Gaza, they're talking about the entire covered area of Gaza, West Bank and Israel. any individual business or sole proprietor or estate or trust whose records, books, tax preparer. And until I read this, that's one I hadn't thought of. I know there are international tax preparation firms. I've dealt with one in Tel Aviv. Actually dealt with the clients. My clients dealt with them in Tel Aviv. Records or tax preparers are located anywhere in the covered area. Again, Israel, West Bank, or Gaza, which pretty much is everything. Anyone killed, injured, or taken hostage due to the terrorist attacks, any individual affiliated with a recognized government or philanthropic organization, and who is assisting in the covered area, such as a relief worker. So what's interesting about this is this now extends to relief workers who are probably going to be there for a while. They're saying it's a mess. It's going to take a while to sort all this out. So relief workers that are involved, especially, I mean, even the Red Cross. There are local organizations that are involved in this. They have local offices that are involved in this. I mean, this potentially could affect people right here in Rutherford County. So anybody that's going to be over there as a relief worker in any capacity in the covered area qualifies. The IRS automatically identifies taxpayers as principal residents, and then it goes on to just say how they do it. What we do is in the tax return, and we are aware of who's who in our business this affects. We'll be keeping an eye on this, and this seems like a minor thing, but with everything else they've got to go with, this is one less thing on their plate. You know, I'll comment because the IRS, you know, when there's been a hurricane or there's been flash flooding or there's been these disasters, the IRS will go ahead and give people these deadlines. And I always say, believe me, their tax return is the last thing on their mind. Nobody has ever called me. Let me say it this way. Nobody has ever called me. And I've got clients in Florida. I've got clients that have been affected by, I mean, at least a dozen hurricanes. I mean, Fort Myers, I had a client, he sent me pictures from his condo. I mean, the entire back wall of his condo got ripped out, literally sucked out. He said, and at least he had a sense of humor about it. Now I have an oceanfront view from every room. And so literally, I mean, the whole back wall was gone. So believe me, the last thing on their mind, nobody has ever called me and said, oh, my tax return, I got to get you those documents. No, that's like the last thing they care about. And I'll always comment on that. And I'll say, you know, the IRS really. But in this case, I'm going to tell you what, I got to say kudos to them for doing this, for them being proactive on this, because we're living in a time where everybody's condemning Israel. And really, people that jumped on this early really looked stupid when the pictures started to come out and what really happened. Anybody that was condemning Israel that day, I mean, Saturday, I mean, I left here, by the way. This is going to be one of those moments. Like, I remember, I was a little child, but I remember my family being in shock when John F. Kennedy, and I was little, but it's like I remember, just vaguely remember something bad had happened, you know, and I was little. I mean, it was, and it's like one of my first memories. And then I remember when we landed on the moon. Although some people deny that happened, just so you know.
We went to the moon.
Thank you, Tom, for correcting that.
No problem.
Yeah, I remember when we said we went to the moon. How about that?
Yeah.
Because you know I'm going to get an email on it. We never went to the moon. For the people that are listening and don't understand, there are, because some of you may not, there are people who actually deny that we ever went to the moon. There's a whole conspiracy theory that we staged the whole thing to cause the Russians to develop a space program, because looking back in history, the Russian space program almost bankrupted them.
Oh, yeah.
Their efforts to get to the moon completely failed, and they just sunk billions of dollars into it, which back then was real money. Today it's play money. Back then it was real money. They sunk billions, and it almost bankrupted them, and it's one of the contributing things to their collapse, their financial collapse. So they're going back saying that we just played a bluff game. We've never been to the moon. Well, I remember, yeah, thank you, Tom. I remember that. And I remember the Twin Towers. Now, I remember this. I left here last Saturday, and I got an email from a friend that said, start praying for Israel right now. And he is an Israeli that lives here in the United States. Sent me an email and said, start praying for Israel. It's bad. That's all he said. That's what the email said. It's bad. And for this guy to say it's bad, I mean, this guy's son was in the IDF. You know, yeah. This guy's son was in the back in some stuff was happening. So for this guy to say it's bad, I called Christy right away and said, I just got this email and forwarded to her. I said, did you see this? And he says it's bad. And then, of course, as the day went on, we learned more about what happened. But I think this is definitely going to be one of those things in my life that we will remember. And I mean, to say that our prayers are with them is really not enough. We've been thinking about it just all the time. We were actually going to go to Israel. We were actually going to go to Judea and Samaria in May of 2020. And then that COVID thing happened. And they were one of the first countries to lock down. And we put that on hold. And we actually had some plans. We're discussing some plans to go here in the near future. So who knows what's going to happen? Nobody knows. And again, to say to pray, it almost sounds contrite, but what else do we do? You know, there's nothing else we can do here as Americans pray for them and just denounce anti-Semitism anywhere you see it, anywhere you hear it, anywhere you come across it. It is a poison. I don't know any other way to say it. It is just a poison and it is a lie. And just so there is something we can do. Just come against it. I mean, when I heard Bernie Sanders' comments against Israel, and he's a Jew, and he's condemning Israel, I'm like, what is going on? Are people that blind? Maybe I should get my Bible. I got it in my car. Let me get my Bible and read about Isaiah. What's this thing I hold in my hand? What's this truth? What is truth? I mean, a nation was just, well, let's go ahead and take a break, Tom. And let's come back, and I'm going to talk about, get those house flippers listening, because I'm going to, and this is going to be a deep dive, folks. We're going to take a deep dive. Get your IRS rule books out. This is Gilbert Talks Taxes, WCAB, AM 590, FM 100.9. I didn't even get any water or anything. We are back, WCAB, AM 590, FM 100.9. I didn't even get up to get water or anything. Tom was telling me, the program is Gilbert Talks Taxes. Yeah, taxes. Okay, we're talking about really important stuff here.
Yeah.
Gilbert Talks Taxes. We are doing tax returns. I am a tax preparer. I do financial planning. Give me a call, 828-289-9300. There, we can all go home now. Okay. 289-9300. I've got two offices, one in Forest City, one in Tryon. I can see you now, this time of the year. So Monday's the deadline. I beat that into the ground for 20 minutes already. Monday's the deadline. Tom, when's the deadline?
Monday.
Thank you, Tom. Monday's the deadline, Tom, the ever cheerful Tom here. Monday's the deadline. Okay, so what do you do after taxes? You take a long vacation? No. Actually, our Tuesday is booked. Our Wednesday is booked. We've got next week's actually very busy for us. What do? Now we start doing tax planning. We get into what I really like, tax planning, business planning. This is when we look over, review everything. Okay, we just had this thing happen. What do we do next? And then people that are trying to start new businesses and people that want to get things going, this is when we do it. So we spend the end of October, going to November, December, doing tax planning and a year planning, making sure everything's right. And then January, we start the whole thing all over again. But call us. Make an appointment. Come on in. You want to talk about your tax planning for your estate, tax planning for your trust, tax planning for you, your wife, your children, college plans. We talk all of this. So many people come to me after the fact, Tom. Oh, I did this, and I look at them. I try to be serious when I say it. I don't know. I don't want to. I'm not trying to be funny, but I say, well, why are you here to see me? You've already done it. There's nothing we can do now. Some actions you can't undo. You know, you can redo them and maybe try to get a different outcome, but before you do some of these things, you know, people make decisions. They'll take money out of an IRA and, you know, oh, I owe $100,000 in taxes now. Yeah, this has happened. Somebody, you know, somebody, they didn't tell me that was going to happen. Who's they? Who are you talking to? Who's this they? This they. People have come to me. They've taken their IRAs out and put them in gold and stuff. Just crazy stuff. Which I'm not saying that putting it in gold is crazy. Maybe it's what you need to do. I don't know. Everybody's financial situation is different. I don't sit here and give advice. Oh, you need to go buy XYZ stock. There's no XYZ company, right? I mean, I hope not, because I just gave financial advice. I just gave financial advice. You got to be careful, because I was telling somebody something and I just made something up, and they searched it on their phone, and sure enough, it was a company. Like, and I just put like some letters together. You can't buy, you know, ABC stock. Oh, ABC something. Oh, wait, you can't. So you can't just, don't go out and buy the stock. There is no, by the way, there is no tax tip. I got a tip for you. No, keep it. I don't want to hear it. There's no tip. There's no nothing. There's a plan. You either have a plan or you don't. Do plans always work? No. But I'll tell you something. The person with a plan usually gets a little bit further than the person without a plan. I mean, we've done investments that have just gone flat. It's happened. Okay, hey, that didn't work. Let's regroup and do it again. You know, as long as we're not losing money, that's the part that we try to avoid, right? And we try to come up with a plan. But you got to sit down and work out a plan. So do you create a trust? Do you create an estate? What do you do? You need to have that conversation. And that's the thing that is so sad with the older generation. And okay, I'm not exactly young, but the older generation, they didn't talk about their finances. They just didn't. I have so many people that will come, their parents died or their grandparents died. And they'll come and they didn't know. They'll bring me papers. What does this mean? What is this? They had no meeting, no, even just sitting down and saying, this is what I have. This is what's going to happen when I die. This is what I've decided to do. I've got ones, and I was talking to one yesterday. Nobody picked an executor. Person dies. And I'm sorry. They never talked about an executor. Person dies. And the man finds out he's named in the will as the executor. So he's like, do I even want this job? Because there's a lot of work involved in this one. There's a trust, there's money, there's assets to be disposed of, there's five beneficiaries. Actually, there's five beneficiaries, two are dead, so their estates are the beneficiaries, and the one estate is full of children and grandchildren and nieces and nephews, and it's gonna be a lot of work for this man. And he's like, nobody told me this. Nobody sat down and once, I had no idea. And he's like, well, what do I do about this? So we had a conversation, but that generation just didn't talk about it. So having a plan is really, really the key, just a basic plan. And this is what we do. Give me a call. This is what I love to do, actually. As much as I enjoy doing taxes and I enjoy the investment side of it, it's the tax planning and the looking forward. WCAB. No, let's not take a break yet. I'm sorry, Tom. I'm ahead of myself here. Give me a call, 828-289-9300. Okay, let me talk about you house flippers. Did I give them enough time to get there? Are they ready? They got a cup of coffee in their hand. Now, you said during the break that you know somebody that loves to watch HGTV.
Yeah.
So there's two kinds of people that watch HGTV. People that actually do house flipping and mock every minute of it, because I've got one of those. I got a client like that. He just, he gets literally, we have some good times. He hates that. And it makes it look like anybody can do it. It just makes it look like, oh yeah, let's just buy this house and flip it and we're going to make $1 million. Yeah. Well, okay. It's a double wide. I don't know how you're going to make $1 million on a double wide, but okay, fine. And they have no experience in doing this. And then the other kind of people that watch HGTV are people that just watch it because they watch the celebrity personalities on it. There's people that just watch it. Oh, look what they did with that house. And so many of the projects are just impractical. Where do these people come from? I mean, the guy's like a research scientist working on, you know, mapping the genomes of fruit flies. and the other lady's yoga instructor, stay-at-home mom, and their budget's $3 million. I'm like, where do they find these people? They're looking for a little fixer-upper with a swimming pool and a helipad. I mean, it's like, really? Yeah, a swimming pool and a helipad, because, yeah. You know, we're learning how to fly a helicopter. It's like, what? Yeah. Yeah, and our budget's $3.2 million. And it's like that. And now it's coming out that a lot of those programs are fake. You've heard about this, right? Yeah, they're fake. They're not real. It's not... The homes they showed them weren't even the homes. One guy, the home that supposedly he bought wasn't even the home that he bought.
Yeah.
The whole thing was made up. The whole thing was staged. So you have people that watch this. So what this has done is it's created this whole market of people that think flipping a house is easy. And it's not. So let me fast forward this week. And why I'm talking about this is because a lot of people don't understand how the taxes of flipping a home works. And a lot of people do it wrong. So let me set it up. What happened is, and I got to watch my time, Tom, because, you know, Tom, I can ramble on a subject because I do want to talk about gift taxing, because gift taxing is important. A lot of people are been calling me about gifting. So the real estate market, so we know 2008 was the big bubble. There was a crash. And right after 2008, 2009, 10, 11, there were a lot of foreclosures. Okay. And a lot of people bought a lot of these foreclosures. They bought them at incredibly cheap prices, and they were able to fix these homes or change or do whatever to these homes and then turn around and sell them. And it got called a flip. I just flipped it. I never lived in it. I bought it, did whatever I did to it, and sold it. Some people didn't even have to remodel them. Some of them just needed to be sold. And some people made a lot of money. Some people lost a lot of money. It's okay. So I know, I see it. They've come to me. They lost a lot of money. So not every flip was a $1 million flip and all these people are now wealthy on HGTV. That's not what happened. That's not the reality of it. Okay. So 2011, 12, now we saw what happened in the last 3 years. Housing prices are crazy. And we're now getting in this flipping mentality again. It's come to the point though where it's hard to find properties, but that's a whole other story. So what happened this week is a client who I only work for the client, but the client is part of another, I'm trying to explain the relationship here. The client is part of another group that buys and sells commercial real estate. Okay. So they have a CPA that works with them. So the CPA is doing the corporate taxes and wrapping all that up. And my client submits the thing to him. Well, my client had bought some land. On that land was a house. He carves the house out because he didn't want the house. He was actually going to bulldoze the house, but he decided to keep it. It was an old house and he just needed some sprucing up, a little TLC, and somebody could enjoy this house. So he carved it out of the bigger holding. And it actually carved out real nice because it was sitting off in a corner, had access off the side road, direct to the road, to a paved road. So it was a nice little situation. Carved it out, put a little money into it, flipped it, made about $80,000. Okay. I put it as, or I told him to put it on his tax return as a capital gain. It was an asset. And most people would do this. The CPA said no. It's not capital gain because IRS code says that if you're flipping a house, you have to put it on Schedule C. Now, capital gain goes on Schedule D. Now, what is the difference? Okay, this is the part that is important. What's the difference? 15.3% taxes is the difference. Okay, if you put it on Schedule C, and now what is Schedule C? It's profit and loss from a business, okay? And anything you put on Schedule C, okay, you pay self-employment tax on, which is 15.2%. I'm rounding, it's an odd number, but it's 15.261, whatever, 15%, 15.2%. Extra on top of the income tax. So if you're in a, and I'm just making a number up, you're in a 15% tax bracket, It's 15% for your tax bracket and 15% for your self-employment tax. Now, that flip, just to use even numbers, let's say the guy had made $100,000. Instead of him just paying $15,000 of income tax, he's now going to pay $30,000 in taxes. Okay, if you put it on Schedule C. But if you put it on Schedule D, all you're going to pay is capital gains tax, which is now if it's short term. So short term capital gains is an asset that you sold, whatever that asset is, that you held for less than a year. Long term capital gains is any asset you held for longer than a year. Literally a year and a day makes it long term. Okay, so long term capital gains actually has a floor that starts at zero. And then I'm not going to go through the whole chart, but depending on if you're single or married, filing jointly, it goes up and it's, you know, 15-20%, but it goes up. You're going to pay substantially less tax if you're just paying capital gains. Short-term capital gains, you're just going to pay whatever your income rate is plus the 3.8%. You're still saving 12%+, okay, on it. Now, this is just, I'm really trying to say this right. So you would think this is cut and dry. The IRS has rules about this. Well, no, it's not cut and dry. It's actually a lot of gray in this. Because this person I was talking to, the CPA, just happens to be a CPA. This is not every CPA. I'm an EA again. He's a CPA. Tax law is what I do. And so he's coming from it that any house flip has to be on Schedule C. And I tried to go over the regulations with them, and I even went to the AI CPA website, which is the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. And I pulled this sheet that I am holding here, and I read it to him. Well, I didn't get to read it to him because it was pretty much the conversation was over. But so you buy a house. Now, if you buy a house and you live in it and then you sell it, that is your primary residence. Okay, and there's all kinds of rules about that. You have to, there's an ownership test, there's a live-in test. You have to live in the property at least 2 out of 5 years, okay, from the date of sale. So you have to live in it for at least 2 years. And the thing is, some people will own it, rent it, move to another house, so that's why they do that. But it's 2 years out of 5. If you live in the house and you pass the live-in test, you can exclude $250,000 of gain if you're single, $500,000 of gain if you're married filing joint. Okay, that's a huge exclusion. Unless you're living in some colossal home or you live like in New York or California, that's a huge exclusion. For around here, most people will take that exclusion and will not pay any tax on the sale of that home. However, if you purchase the property with no intention of living in it and you fix it and flip it, you now come into this scenario that I'm talking about. So the question is it a trade or a business? And this is where the IRS doesn't give us black and white guidance. And I totally understand why where the CPA was going with this. But he was acting like this is the way it is. This is black and white. If you flip a home, you got to do it on Schedule C and pay that self-employment tax. And I said, no, you don't. And I'm reading, and this is from the CPA's website. If you purchase, fix, and flip multiple properties on a routine basis as your primary form of business, then yes, you put it on Schedule C. So if you're flipping it homes as how you're making your money, your primary or a substantial part of your income, it's got to go on Schedule C. If you're not putting it on Schedule C and you get audited, you could be in trouble. You could be liable for that self-employment tax of 15.2% on the money you made. Okay, again, if you get audited, you've got to. So if you're flipping as a business, you need to be aware of that. It is not capital gains. But what about the scenario where my man bought a property, had this house on it, did some minimal work to it, sold it, and just happened to make some money because he carved it out? He has a full-time job. He works. He's not got nothing to do with flipping homes. It was an occasional sale of an asset. I say that's a capital gains, and you put it on Schedule D. And this is where the CPA and I, you know, differed. Now, he said it's a rule. No, it's not a rule. And I'm reading this right from the CPA's AICPA website. The problem is, and this is a quote, there is no set number to determine how many flips render you as a professional flipper. So when the client asked me, well, how many is it? I said, it depends. There is no number. It's not as easy as saying if you flip five or more homes per year, you must treat the profits as ordinary income. It's a case-by-case analysis. The IRS analyzes your specific situation to determine whether or not you're running a business. If you're flipping a few homes per month, it's safe to say you're probably going to be considered as conducting a trade or business in the form of flipping homes. If you flip one home per year, it's easier to label you as an investor who doesn't flip homes on a regular basis. I would even argue you could flip two or three a year and not be considered a professional flipper. I really could. It's not like, you know, North Carolina, if you buy and sell more than 10 cars, and I believe it's 10, my car people out there are probably cringing right now. I believe it's 10 or more, or it might be 9 or less. I can't remember. But right around 10 cars, if you buy and sell 10 cars in a year, in a 12-month period, and I think it's I'm not sure if it's a calendar year or a running year, whatever, if you do 10, you're considered a car dealer. And you need a license, and you got to pay taxes, and you got to pay fees and all this stuff. If you do less, you're just considered a guy that likes cars. You buy and sell cars. It's fun. It's a hobby. You own a bunch of cars. You're getting new cars and selling old cars, right? So it's kind of that thing. But we have a concrete number. We have a line in the sand. You cross 10, you're not professional. It's not this way with flipping homes. It's whatever the auditor is going to want to do. So like my guy, I told him, I said, look, this man's, you're going to pay 15% more tax because of this. Now, there is another side to Schedule C. You can take a lot more write-offs than you can with the capital gains on your cost basis, but there's arguments both ways. So if you're in that position where you're not sure, you've been, and some people have been doing it last year or this year, 2023, there are some people that have been moving some real estate, buying and selling some homes. If you have any questions, I'd love to meet with you. And I've put together a handout that discusses this, the primary residence, the investment, the trade or business. I'd love to hand it off to you. Give me a call, 828-289-9300. I'll take care of that. Tom, I need some water. And we're going to come back and talk about gifting. You're thinking about giving money away. You're older and you're winding up your estate. Gifting is a great way to do it. And you don't pay tax on it. WCAB AM 590 FM 100.9. We are back. WCAB AM 590 FM 100.9. Boy, we worked the whole time here. We weren't on break. The phone was ringing. We were answering phone calls. Good question. Whoever called in, if you inherit a home, do you have to pay capital gains on it? Okay, I can give you that answer quickly. I'm going to give you the nutshell answer. You inherit a home, and that's happening a lot in this. I mean, there's a whole generation passing away. And we've had more of these than ever. So what happens is, okay, I'm going to use Uncle Marvin again. Uncle Marvin passes away. On Uncle Marvin's date of death, all his assets, whether it's a home, stock, whatever he has, gets what's called a step up in basis. So Uncle Marvin dies. His house that he paid $25,000 for, you know, 40 years ago, and today is worth, and I'm just using, you know, even numbers, is worth $150,000, okay? So Uncle Marvin dies and leaves that to his heirs. That house, the basis is not what Uncle Marvin paid for it, you know, the $25,000 he paid for it 40 years ago. The basis gets stepped up to the date of death. So his basis is now $150,000, or the heirs' basis in that house is now $150,000. So the heirs are, you know, they have the memorial service and a funeral for Uncle Marvin, and they're all grateful that he left them something. And then they decide, they meet and they say, hey, let's just sell the house. Okay. And you sell the house for $170,000. Okay. The only capital gains you're going to pay is the $20,000 difference. The date of death value was $150,000. You sell it for $170,000, you're going to pay capital gains on the $20,000. Now, remember, I'm using round numbers, but you deduct from that $170,000, you deduct real estate commissions, taxes, attorney's fees, recording fees, all your costs get deducted. You don't pay tax on that. So let's just assume you netted $170,000, you have $20,000. You individually, not the estate, you will pay capital gains tax or whoever on that $20,000. Now, there's five beneficiaries. They're going to split that and it's all going to come out of their, you know, their proceeds. And you are going to pay. So they're each going to get whatever money they get. You're going to pay, you individually on your tax return are going to pay capital gains on your portion. Now, let's say you just sell it for the $150,000. You will pay zero tax because that is the value, the stepped up cost basis. And let's say you sell it for $140,000. You know, they said the house was worth $150,000, but we want to fire sell it. We want to get rid of it. We want the cash. We'd rather have, what's that old saying, Tom? The fast nickel instead of the slow dime. Yeah. I'd rather have the fast nickel. And people do. They want to liquidate it. Let's sell it real fast. I know a lady, her husband passed away, and she was trying to get everything taken care of, and she fire sailed a lot of things. And it was like, I was like, ooh. But she wanted to liquidate the estate. She just, that's what she felt like she had a hold of doing, and so she wanted to do. So let's say you sell it for $140,000. You now have what's called a capital loss. No capital gain. Unfortunately, with inherited property, you can't claim a deduction. You can only claim to that $150,000, so you can't go below zero. So that's that. You will pay no tax on it. There, we have no inheritance tax. There's no federal inheritance tax to $12,060,000. Why is it $60,000? I don't know. So you're excluded to $12 million. And North Carolina has no inheritance tax. So people ask me all the time, grandma left me this, grandma left me that. Am I going to pay tax on it? No, it's inherited property. Tax has already been paid on it. Grandma already did it and whatever. It's already been paid. You inherited this property. You will not. Again, if you keep it and sell it for more money than that date of death, I see a lot of times where, and I just had one last year, grandma dies and leaves. Well, she left her two sons a house. And, you know, typical situation, grandma had lived in the house forever. I mean, literally, she'd lived in this house like 60 years. And she had fixed nothing. You know, bare minimum she did to it. Well, she didn't need much, right? She's grandma, right? You know, a cast iron skillet's all grandma needed. Boy, she made the best Thanksgiving dinners ever. And that's all she had was a cast iron skillet and no coffee pot. So she passed away. So the two sons decided, hey, let's put some money into the house. It was in a very nice area, very nice area. Actually, a very nice house. Had some land with it. And they thought, hey, let's go ahead and, you know, put electricity in it. Let's get these things. You know, they invested quite a bit of money and sold the house and made quite a bit of money. It was a good call for them. So they paid, you know, the capital gains on the gain, but you're still excluded that step up in basis. And then whatever money they invested in it is a deduction because it steps up your basis. They put 50,000-60,000 into it, the cabinets, the bathrooms, you know, the usual stuff, the windows, the roof, and turned around and sold it and made a good little profit on it. And then they split that capital gains 50-50. Okay, so yes, I hope I answered that. And I'm going to be talking more about estates and trusts and things. Actually, I'm getting into it right now with this gift tax. So gifting. I'll get a phone call. People will say, especially last year, I get this phone call a lot of times in the spring when they're graduating. The grandchildren are graduating high school. They're making their college plans. I'll get a phone call from grandma and grandpa that say, hey, I want to give little Susie and little Timmy, not their real names, I want to give little Susie and little Timmy some money for college. How much tax will they pay on that money? Will they pay tax on that money? And I tell them, no, that's not how it works. Little Susie and little Timmy, or any recipient of a gift, they're not the ones that pay the tax. The ones that pay the tax are the people that give it. Okay, it's gift tax. The gift tax is probably the most ignored tax that can affect an estate. Now, the tax code lets you exempt up to $16,000 per year. Okay, and that gets inflated. So that's the 2022 number. There's a step up for inflation in that. But it's gone up very little. So I'm hearing the International Morse Code signal their time in the background. Are we okay?
Yeah.
Are we still on the air?
Yeah.
Tom's just feverishly engineering away there, going at it. So you're excluded up to $16,000 a year. Now that is per person. So grandpa can give Timmy $16,000 and grandma, if they're married, filing joint, can give Timmy $16,000. Okay. And there is no, they will pay no tax on that money. Now, you don't pay the tax like on your tax return. I don't put it on your tax return. Let's say they decide to give Timmy $20,000. So grandpa gives Timmy $20,000. It's not like grandpa's going to pay tax on the $4,000. What happens is you don't, instead of paying the tax immediately, the federal tax code allows a lifetime gift tax exemption of, it's the same as the inheritance tax, $12,060,000 for each individual that you use to offset the tax liability from making a taxable gift. So think of it as a gift tax coupon. You actually get a $12,060,000 get out of jail card that you can use to gift. Now, I know this sounds like a lot of money to most people, to a lot of people, but I'm seeing, I mean, I always tell the Uncle Marvin story. I mean, Uncle Marvin died and had an estate of $1.8 million. Nobody knew he had a penny. Uncle Marvin worked in a mill his whole life. People are like, how can you have $1.8 million? Well, he lived in the same house for 40-something years. He bought it way back when. It was a nice little house on 40 acres of land. I mean, I think they sold the whole thing for like $800,000. I mean, everybody was shocked. He had a couple of old pickup trucks, which might have been old pickup trucks, but to a collector, they were vintage pieces. And he had a pension. He had life insurance. He had savings bonds. He had savings bonds that were older than me. This guy had never spent a dime. And he had one, he died and had $1.8 million. I'm seeing estates $2 and $3 million that are shocking people. They're like, how can that be? It is. It's the numbers are there. These people, that was the generation that saved money. And they have it. So don't think it's that much. So here's an example. So they want to give, so grandpa and grandma want to give Timmy and Susie $20,000 each. The exclusion is $16,000. And so they've got that $4,000. So what do I do? I have to file a tax return that's called Form 709. And it's a simple tax return. I file that tax return. And it's got to be done, by the way, by April 15th of the year after you gave them the money. And on that tax return, I put that you gave the $20,000, $16,000 is excluded, $4,000 goes against your lifetime giving limit. I'm watching the time there, Tom. Okay. So to wrap this up, and I'm going to be talking more about this because I've actually got like 6 pages of notes on this. I don't want to get into all the little details, but lifetime gifting is a great way to wrap down, to wrap up, to wind down. I tried putting those two words together, to wrap down, to wrap up and pay down your estate, to minimize your estate taxes and to simplify your money. I have people all the time that want to give the money to their family now. Their family needs it now. They've got grandchildren in college, nephews, nieces in college, and they want to do things now while they can enjoy it. So it's a good way to do it. If you want to learn more, if you want some handouts I have on the subject, give me a call, 828-289-9300. Schedule a meeting with me, and we can discuss your particular situation. We're running out of time here, Tom. I don't know. Where does the time go? I never did thank the people that are live streaming. Tom, you didn't really have me in center there, but that's okay. I'm kind of off to the side today. They can see me. They can see me here with my camel coat. You know it's cold when I got the camel sport coat out. www.wcab59.com. Thank you for listening. I will be back next Saturday, right here, live, WCAB AM 590, FM 100.9. I'm going to talk about estates. I'm going to talk about trust. And you will be here, Tom, the ever cheerful Tom. And everybody, please remember, let's keep Israel in our prayers. Thank you for listening.